Welcome to The Checkup, brought to you by Medcast, your go-to source for practical insights, clinical updates, and real conversations that matter to healthcare professionals. Whether you're on the go or taking a break, we're here to keep you informed, connected, and inspired.
Hi, and thank you for joining us. My name is Dr. Rebecca Chan. I'm a GP and medical educator with Medcast, and I'll be your host for this podcast series exploring recent clinical updates in women's health. I'm recording today from the land of the Wangal people of the Eora Nation. On today's podcast, we're going to be looking into the recent introduction of breast density reporting through some breast screen programs and consider how GPs can interpret these results and what supplementary investigations they can consider doing. I'm delighted to welcome our guest for this podcast, Dr. Katrina Tiller. Katrina is speaking to us today from the lands of the Gadigal people. She is a GP and breast physician, as well as the chair of the RACGP Special Interest Group in Breast Medicine. Katrina, thanks so much for joining us today. So let's start with what's new. We've got breast screening programs now, I think, in South Australia, Victoria, WA, and New South Wales, who are including breast density measurements in their reports. Can you give us a little bit of an explanation of what that means and why it's important for GPs?
Breast Screener Australia said that they would want all breast screen dates to now report breast density. So this is part of a breast screen responding to the many changes that have happened in the management of breast cancer. So breast screen used to just send a letter saying, we can't see a breast cancer.
Yep.
That has been their remit, is that we look at everybody's mammogram, which is a 2D mammogram, and say, can we see a breast cancer or not? Or something that suggests there may be a breast cancer, so not definite, but maybe there's some changes. Do we need to do some extra pictures to clarify one way or another? Mm-hmm. So now for these ladies who breast screen says, all looks well, they will still say, all looks well, your mammographic density is. Please see your GP if you want to discuss further.
Okay. So what exactly is breast density and how does that impact a woman's breast cancer risk?
So breast density is not what your breasts feel like or look like. Breast density reflects what your breasts look like in a mammogram machine. Breast density reflects the glandular tissue and the fibrous supportive tissue in your breasts. So breasts are made up of the glandular tissue, so the milk-making part of your breasts, fibrous supportive tissue, and fatty breast tissue. Fatty breast tissue comes up black, and the fibroglandular tissue comes up white. What we know is that breast cancers start in the fibroglandular tissue. Mm-hmm. So the more fibroglandular tissue you have, the higher your breast cancer risk. The more tightly packed this fibroglandular tissue is, the higher your breast cancer risk. So when someone has dense breasts on a mammogram, it means they have predominantly fibroglandular tissue on a mammogram, so their mammograms are predominantly white. Okay. If women have predominantly fatty breast tissue, their mammograms will be predominantly black. And then there's all the shades of grey in between. By having more fibroglandular tissue, your breast cancer risk is higher. And if you think when women have their breasts off for a mastectomy because of maybe risk reduction or for a breast cancer, their risk goes down. So if there's risk reduction surgery, their breast tissue goes. So if you think about the less fibroglandular tissue you have, the lower your risk. That's the first thing. The second thing about mammographic density is that breast cancers come up white. So a little white breast cancer sitting in predominantly white breasts, much harder to see. So what we know is that the 2D mammograms that our breast screen provide, the sensitivity of that test goes down the denser the breasts. So women who have predominantly fatty breast tissue, the sensitivity of that test, i.e. the ability for a well-trained reader to find a breast cancer if it's there, is in the 90s, the 90% sensitivity. And then as the breasts get more dense, so to these extremely dense breasts, so what we call category D density breasts, the sensitivity of a 2D mammogram is in the 60 to 70% range. So the sensitivity goes down.
So you've got almost like a double whammy. It's an independent risk factor on its own, plus it's going to mean the screening is perhaps not quite as sensitive as someone who's got a lower breast density category.
Correct. So there's that two things. And I'm just going to pop this in, and I'll say this a number of times, is that we know that actually having a breast-screen mammogram is better than having nothing at all.
Yep.
So we will continue to encourage women. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't have a breast-screen mammogram. You should, ideally every 2 years. And I guess the other thing I'm going to make a point of here as well is that we've got to remember it's a screen. So
Yes.
women with any symptoms should not be a breast-screen.
Yep.
They have a different imaging pathway to go down.
Yeah, so very important to remember. So for those patients who are asymptomatic and they have just had this screening mammogram through breast screen, and the report does come back showing category C or D breast density, how should we interpret that? And, you know, if we as GPs got that result, would you expect us to actively recall the patient for a discussion or more discuss it opportunistically if they're there for something else?
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? So if they don't come to see you, you've got it in, you see they've got a normal mammogram and they say they've got a C or D, what should you do? Should I recall them? I'm not sure I would recall them because we've been told they've got a normal mammogram.
Yes.
And I guess like all of us, if we've got results that we haven't given to our patients or discussed with our patients, and we've put often no action when we see results come in, or discuss when patient is next in or whatever. So maybe it might be a discuss when the patient is next in, not recall.
I do believe that the patient is informed of their breast density category when they get their results from breast screen as well. Is that correct?
Correct. That is on their letter saying you have category A, B, C or D.
Okay. So say they do come in for the discussion, how would you approach that?
So they've come in and they've said, so I've got category C density. What does that mean, Rebecca?
Yeah.
Or what does that mean, Katrina? And I guess I'd start with, I'd say, have you got any breast symptoms? Have you got any breast concerns? So start with those things of simple history. So if they've got no breast concerns, I would then do a risk assessment that includes family history. And as GPs, we're constantly updating our family history. So just check on their family history. And I guess as in the back of our minds, the other thing I think about is what's their estrogen exposure? So how old are they? Were they at menarche? How many children have they had? Have they breastfed? Are they pre, post, perimenopausal? Are they on any hormones? Are they taking the pill? Are they on hormone therapy? So just doing that risk assessment in my head, if age is significant as far as risk assessment as well, isn't it? So that we know the younger women, they certainly can get breast cancer. They need to be worked up absolutely appropriately. But the older you are, the higher your risk. And if you've got high breast density and you're 60, then your risk is going to be different to if you've got high breast density and you're 40. It doesn't mean the 40-year-old shouldn't be worked up because they've got a lot of life to lose. And, you know, we know women in their 40s get breast cancer as well. So what should we do if someone comes in, they're in their 40s or 50s and their mammogram says it's normal, but they've got category D density breast? I guess the first thing I would do is examine them.
Yeah.
Having taken the history and they've said they feel fine and that they don't feel anything new, although you might find many women go, I never touch my breasts. Can you do it for me? So I think that's a really good reason to examine them. So I'd do that risk assessment. If the family history is complicated, if the woman wants you to as well, you could use a risk assessment tool. We've got a couple of options, risk assessment tool-wise. I do like iPrevent. It is an RACGP accredited tool, and it does use the Tyrocusic and the Bayer DeSeer. So that's the software that's in the background of that risk assessment tool. It's a very user-friendly tool as far as being able to do it online themselves. And then what I often do is ask them to bring it back in to me. Let's have another discussion with that in so that we can check it ourselves and check the inputs correct and then discuss about what might have come out in the result. I know iPrevent's continuing to have improvements. So iPrevent does have breast density as part of its input. And also one of the weaknesses I find with iPrevent is that you can't go backwards. So once you've clicked on it, you've got your final results, you can't then go back and say, well, what would it do if I'm not on HRT anymore? Or what would you have to put everything in again? So, but I know iPrevent is working on that, making that a bit more user friendly.
Yeah. So it sounds like breast density, for example, if a patient comes in with a breast density of category D, we're not necessarily treating it on its own in isolation. It's going to be with all of the other factors that we consider when we're looking at breast cancer risk. So I guess in that case, how would you decide which patients may need to have supplementary screening? And there's a lot available. Patients have heard of them all. They come in asking about them. We've got our 3D mammograms and our contrast mammograms and the MRI as well. I guess my question is, as GPs, when should we be considering ordering one or more of those? Or are we more so considering referral if those imaging modalities are on our list of considerations?
If then as a GP you go, oh gosh, they're lumpy, I don't know what's going on, then I think adding a modality is absolutely appropriate for a category D density but normal 2D mam. So it's the $1 million question about what to do, and you get a room of breast interested doctors in the room, and there'll be a lot of debate about which imaging to add, which is why BreastScreen is actually not saying they should have this, because there's no consensus on what they should have, and is actually not funded. Any extra imaging will not be funded by BreastScreen.
Yes.
But it is an option. They could go and have an ultrasound at a provider that you use for a lot of breast. Mm-hmm. Breast is not easy. Handheld ultrasound is very user dependent, and automated breast ultrasound is around, but it is not around a lot. But we know that it will pick up an extra 4 out of 1,000. So if there are 1,000 mammograms come through, it'll pick up an extra 4 cancers.
Okay.
Our other options are something like contrast enhanced mammography. So contrast enhanced mammography involves having some iodine injected before going through the mammogram machine as usual. So it's pretty low drama in a way, mm-hmm. especially for women who have had mammograms before, because they know what they're like. But it is a bit more radiation, so some women might choose not to have further radiation. So which brings us to MRI. MRI also, like contrast enhanced mammography, works on the angiogenesis. So these are the biologic tests, really. So cancers have their own abnormal blood supply. So by injecting a contrast, which MRI does and contrast enhanced mammography does, the leaky abnormal blood vessels of a cancer are enhanced. So recently published in The Lancet, they did a big trial with 10,000 women using the different modalities after mammogram, and how many cancers were actually picked up using different modalities. So in that study, using MRI, an extra 17 cancers were detected in 1,000 women. Using contrast enhanced mammography, it was similar, an extra 15 per 1,000 examinations. So an extra 15 cancers were picked up for another 1,000 examinations for contrast enhanced, and just 4 extra cancers were picked up on ultrasound. These were invasive cancers that were picked up. Mm-hmm. So there is some addition by having those extra tests in the cancer pickup compared to not.
So I guess you then have to weigh up the cost, the radiation, the discomfort for the patient with those increased detection rates, and make a decision for the patient in front of you with them as to what, how you would go forward making the decision to do a different imaging as well.
Yeah, that's correct. And whether MRI is even accessible for some ladies, whether contrast enhanced mammography is accessible. Contrast enhanced mammography is becoming more accessible. It's much more easy to implement into a radiology practice than having an MRI machine. Yeah. So it is, as you say, a very much a shared decision about which imaging modality the woman would be able to tolerate. I think we've discussed, Rebecca, that some women cannot or would not tolerate having injection. So having a contrast enhanced modality of any type, they might not tolerate. MRI involves lying on your front mm-hmm. for, 20 to 30 minutes. Some women find that claustrophobic. Women with pacemakers can't go in the MRI, for example. Some women are allergic to iodine, which is what's used in a contrast enhanced mammography. So all those things, as a GP, you can discuss and make a decision whether to sit with your normal mammogram result or to have further imaging.
What about the 3D mammography? Does that have a role at all?
Maybe. I mean, that's not an unreasonable thing to do if that's what's available, is send the woman and you decide that my concern's enough that I want to have a second opinion. So that's what that will do. We'll get, if you send them off to the local private radiology and they have a mammogram, 3D mam and an ultrasound. So all of, most of the private radiology practices use 3D or tomography. So 3D and tomography are the same thing. You know, that might pick up a little bit more, similar to ultrasound alone.
But the contrast is better.
Significantly better.
Okay. Yeah. Katrina, can I ask you, when we're talking about all these different types of imaging, what are we talking about from a cost point of view for the patients?
It is a part of their decision-making cost, isn't it? And as part of informed consent, we need to let them know what costs they might be entailing by things we refer them for. So for MRI, if we start with MRI, MRI will cost between $500 and $600 for a full MRI. For contrast enhanced mammography, that will also entail an out-of-pocket cost, and that will be at least $250. And then ultrasound out-of-pocket costs will vary, I imagine, from practice to practice. Being able to give those costs to the patient may also be helpful in making a decision about which way to go. And some women might not blink at $600, and some, for many women, that is not accessible if they're average risk.
Yeah.
If women are high risk and meet the criteria for high risk, so greater than 30% lifetime risk for breast cancer, they would qualify for a Medicare rebated MRI. As you know, this needs to be referred by a subspecialist, a non-GP specialist, to get that rebate.
Yeah.
But we as GPs can refer patients for MRI. It just would not be rebated.
Yeah, more expensive, and again, a consideration when you're talking about the options.
That's right.
You made a comment earlier about breast screen and having your you know, your screening mammogram, even with dense breasts, is still better than not having anything done. I'll just throw in this question because it gets asked to me quite frequently from patients, you know, those ones who absolutely hate having their mammograms, and they come in and they say, oh, no, I just want to do a 2-yearly ultrasound instead. I'm not doing the mammogram. How would you approach that case?
Good question, because there's certainly women around. And in fact, it comes to the point that's, you know, almost 50% of eligible women don't attend for breast screen. So encouraging all our women to be screened, ideally at breast screen, and I guess just informing them that it is the validated tool for picking up cancers. But doing something is better than nothing. Potentially, the risk with ultrasound is that it is user-dependent.
Yes.
And that things can be missed on that as well. Is it better than nothing? Maybe.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? As evident, you know, as we try as doctors to be as evidence-based. But, you know, I do also find myself saying to women, you know, we don't live in a police state. You can do what you like. You can choose what you do with your
yes.
life. And as long as, you know, it's a whole informed decision, isn't it? We do our best to make our best decisions, and then we live with our decisions, and then we discuss it again, and we do the best with our, you know, I think just doing the best we can with the information we have is all that we can do.
Yes. And that, I think, just to reemphasize that shared decision-making, as we've talked about, I think that's probably just, like you said, the best way that we can approach it in general practice, with this and with everything else probably as well. No, that's been so interesting to talk about. I do want to throw, just before we finish, one final thing to you, if that's okay. I wanted to get your opinion quickly on risk-reducing medications like tamoxifen. So again, I know from experience using the iPrevent tool that it will often come up as a recommendation for patients. I have to say that I personally haven't quite had the confidence to use it, maybe just because I haven't had the experience with it. Is this something that you think GPs should consider initiating more often, or would you expect GPs to be looking into that as a potential treatment to try? Or do you think it more so would fall into the realm of a referral and a breast physician review?
It's a good question. I think working within our scope of practice is another sort of key thing these days, isn't it? Is that doing things that you feel comfortable with is appropriate. So if the recommendation comes up, consider tamoxifen, remembering that is just consider as an option, and giving someone, the patient particularly, the information about tamoxifen and what it is. In the premenopausal, perimenopausal ladies anyway, very few of them actually tolerate tamoxifen particularly well. So I think it's a shared decision making about what this lady is prepared to tolerate. There, as you know, there is a PDMAC initiated telehealth referable service that women can have a conversation with one of the nurses connected to the PDMAC medical oncology team about risk and risk reducing medications. And they will actually start a woman on a risk reducing medication if they decide that's the pathway they want to go down. And they will monitor that over the early term, like over 6 to 8 weeks. And then the patient would get returned to the GP if all was going well on a medication. So that's another referral pathway rather than, you know, sending them off in a face to face. They're obviously very welcome to come to see a breast physician like myself. There are breast physicians around the country, more so in some places than others. Most of us are GPs by background, so also not necessarily a referral needed, but obviously that keeps everyone in the loop if referrals are made, because then the back and forth happens and the communication happens.
Yeah. Well, I guess the takeaway for people listening is that breast density is a risk factor that we can consider when we're looking at breast cancer risk. There are other risk factors, and we should always be making a full assessment and using assessment tools like iPrevent to determine where your individual patient sits. And then we do have additional imaging modalities that patients can consider going down the road with, but that again is a shared decision-making process between the GP and the patients, and there's no consensus as to one being better than another.
That's correct. That's correct.
Great. Thank you so much. That's been so interesting for me to find out some more information, because I guess it feels very topical. I'm in New South Wales, so it is new, although I acknowledge that other states probably feel like they've been managing this already for a while. But I really appreciate, I feel like I've got a bit more guidance now on how I can approach these conversations with patients, and a bit more information to help them make those informed decisions. So I think it's been really helpful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for joining us today. We hope it's been very helpful and informative, and I certainly have learned a lot myself. Please do keep listening. We will have several podcasts coming up, particularly on recent clinical updates in women's health. And I hope you've enjoyed the podcast today, and I hope you'll be listening again soon. Thanks and goodbye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Checkup by Medcast. If you found today's episode helpful, don't forget to follow, rate, and share it with your colleagues. For more episodes, clinical resources, courses, and upcoming events, head to medcast.com.au.